my final guests for the afternoon are in. I have Rebecca Vary, if I got it right.
Yes, that's right.
From Woodfines. Good afternoon. You're from Woodfines. And Katie Holmes from CKLG Accountants. Very good afternoon to you both. This is crazy. Two of you in the the two together in a studio. I don't think we've done this before.
I know, dream team.
I'm just thinking solicitors and accountants in the same. Can we afford this?
Who knows?
Now, as I said, we've been talking about domestic abuse and domestic violence and things like that. Today's subject is actually quite often, I guess, the natural follow on, the consequence of that. And we're going to be talking about divorce, but there's lots to consider, isn't there? And I'm finding this thing very interesting because it's such an emotive subject. But actually, what you've both been telling me before we've gone live is you need to actually think about this really quite carefully, don't you? Should we start with you, Rebecca, from a legal side?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what people overlook is actually when they get married, they acquire a whole range of financial claims against one another. And so when you come to separate or divorce, you've got to sort out those financial claims. I mean, we look at various things when people come to consult me with regards to divorce or separation. We need to look at, for example, whether they've got properties, whether they have pensions, what the income situation is. And we do that by looking at doing sort of financial disclosure with clients. So we have a look at the value of various assets, properties, pensions, etc. And then once we've looked at financial disclosure, we then need to decide how we're going to sort out the financial settlement between the two of them. So it's a case of, if it's amicable, and sometimes it can be amicable, it's looking at whether we can get an agreement in a consent order. So a consent order is a financial order that's agreed between the parties and submitted to a judge for approval within divorce proceedings. So that's the way that we would look to do finances if it's by agreement. If they can't agree, then we'd look at making an application to the court for financial relief. Now, when we do that, obviously it takes more time than if the couple were to agree their settlement, because you're then bound by a court timetable. So when we look at divorce proceedings, I tend to say to my clients it takes anywhere from sort of 6 to 9 months for a straightforward divorce, but we tend to like to sort out finances before you get your decree absolute,
right,
which is the final decree of divorce, because it changes your legal status. You're no longer married, you no longer have a spouse, and so it changes things, for example, entitlement under a pension, to a widow's pension. So we have to be careful about the timing of things, and so we would look at holding off decree absolute until we've got a financial settlement agreed or ordered by the court. And so then you're looking at more of a delay. So when you start financial proceedings, you could, for example, be looking at 12 months of court proceedings before you get a final order. And of course, when you look at timeframes like that, you come to think about the knock-on effect of, for example, tax implications. So I know Katie's going to talk more about that in a moment. But your tax position changes when you're a married couple to when you're a separated couple to when you're a divorced couple. So there's various things that you need to think about with regards to that as well.
Okay, now, I'm guessing you hear so much stuff doing the rounds, and I'm guessing an awful lot of what goes around is misinformation, urban myth about, she's entitled to this, he's entitled to that. Are there some commonly held untruths out there? Do people often think, it's okay, it's fine, I'll get this, or things that, I'm entitled to this, I'm entitled to that? No, you're not.
Yeah, absolutely. I think people come along and think everything's going to either be divided down the middle, or their other half has got debts, and they think they're going to be lumbered with half of the debts. And it's never straightforward. We have to look at it on a case-by-case basis and apply a number of factors and look at what each party needs. And every case is different. So one couple might have children, and that changes a settlement entirely, whereas a couple without children, it is more straightforward to divide the assets. So yes, it is definitely, we've got to look at it at a case-by-case basis, and that's why I was explaining about going through financial disclosure is so important, because until we know what there is and the value of those assets, it's really difficult to advise parties about what would be a fair and reasonable settlement. So it's definitely wise to get expert advice.
Yeah, okay, so we're talking there largely about where it's amicable, and I'm guessing, Are the vast majority amicable? Or
I think more so now than when I first started in the profession. I think people are making a real effort to use mediation to try and talk about things in an amicable way, because ultimately I think, you know, solicitors are very upfront and we will say to our clients, well, you know, if you do go down the litigation route and have to go to court, it will cost more money. Mm. And often where assets are limited, people want to save money and try and do things, you know, in an amicable way and within their budget. And I think also that's really important to approach things amicably when there are children involved. So, yes, lots of people do choose to do that.
But what about in the situation where it isn't, where you know, maybe perhaps somebody has absconded off and actually it's more difficult to get a hold of them? Are there powers that you can use to sort of force people to disclose things?
Yeah, absolutely. So if somebody is being tricky and perhaps hiding money, or you know, the other half says, well, I'm sure that so-and-so's got a pension with this company, or they've opened a savings account and I don't think they've disclosed it, then we would look at making an application to the court for financial relief, and then they are ordered to do full disclosure on a special financial form. So, yes, there are ways around that.
OK. And what about looking forward? Does everything, when you get divorced, is that literally it? That you're no longer married, the court has decided that's it? Or is there ongoing rights and claims on each other? I'm thinking of things like child support and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's it. So that's why it's important to sort out your finances within a divorce. Lots of people will go online and do a divorce themselves, but I think what they don't appreciate is that they are financially tied. That's what sort of linked back to when I started speaking about when you marry someone, you acquire all these claims against each other for financial relief, and they do need to be sorted out. They don't just automatically end when you get divorced. So it is really important to look into it and have that final order of the court that says certain claims are ended and certain claims are dealt with in this way, so that, you know, people are secure in the knowledge that their future claims against one another have ended.
Right, OK. One thing which I found was really interesting there is that whole fact you said that hold fire on the decree absolute, because there's decree nisa,
decree nisa is the first decree of divorce, and then the law says that 6 weeks and a day later you're entitled to apply for your
decree
absolute.
But that's entitled, not automatic.
That's right, it's entitled, so we would advise a client about the appropriate time to apply for decree absolute, but very often if finances aren't sorted out, we would hold back on that and try and sort that out for various reasons.
Yeah. Okay, all right, so we've got that going on the one hand, and Katie, on the other hand, you're getting your on the financial year calendar, because there must be implications across the board with this.
There are, and obviously it's not the forefront of most people's minds when they're going through the divorce. They've got all of, you know, everything they're trying to deal with, and as Rebecca said, you know, you've got the emotional side going on as well as trying to deal with the legal side. But especially from a tax perspective, you're deemed to sort of still be a couple living together for certain tax reliefs at a different point for different taxes. And that's what can confuse it even further. So, for example, for IHT, gifts between spouses are normally done on a IHT-free basis.
So that's inheritance tax, yeah?
Yes, sorry, inheritance tax. So that can continue all the way up until decree absolute. Whereas for CGT, it's only up until the end of the tax year. Sorry, CGT is capital gains tax. It's only up until the end of the tax year that you separate. So actually, moving out on the 5th of April versus the 6th of April could give you a, you know, if you move out a day later, you've got a whole extra year where you can still transfer assets between you.
My goodness.
On a nil gain, nil loss basis. The other thing where I've had experience sort of both through work and just generally talking to people who are going through it is around the family home. So as Rebecca said, it can take a few years for the divorce proceedings to go all the way through. Mm. And the family home may then be being sold. It may be being transferred to one of the spouses as part of the financial settlement. And there could be a capital gains tax charge arising for the spouse who has moved out of the property. Now, there are things you can do to help that not to happen, but it's important that you're aware of it all at the outset so that you can plan and sort of have these deadlines in mind and try to mitigate any of these taxes, because the last thing you want, having gone through this whole process, is to find out that you've got an unexpected tax bill at the end of it.
Okay, so I mean, this is awful, isn't it? Because you're talking about timings. If what about all those people listening now thinking, hang on a minute, that was a mistake then? Is there any turnaround on this? What happens if you think, oh no, is there any appeal on any of this? Or is it just, no, tough luck, mate, those are the dates?
It's the legislation, then those are the dates. So, you know, the biggest one is the capital gains tax and only having till the end of the tax year in which you separate. And as I've just said, sort of one day difference could give you a whole extra year to transfer assets between you on a tax-free basis. Now, there can be things, for example, with the family home, you can have a court order in place which helps preserve the capital gains tax exemption on sale. So there are things that you can get in place down the line, but you can't change the dates, so to speak. It's just that there are a few reliefs available for certain aspects of it. And for inheritance tax, for example, although you've only got until decree absolute to transfer assets between you as husband and wife on a tax-free basis, there are other potential inheritance tax reliefs that could apply to mean that there is still no charge or potential liability to inheritance tax. So
it could be like you just really need somebody like you to look at it and go, ah, well, that's in this situation. What about income tax and things like that? Again, does it...
Income tax, well, in the UK, obviously, we have independent taxation. So even once you're married, you still have independent taxation.
Right.
The only things that can change, really, from an income tax perspective that you're looking at is, so there is, you can transfer part of your personal allowance between spouses. If one spouse isn't using all of their personal allowance and the other spouse is a basic rate taxpayer. So obviously, if you have been claiming that, you won't be able to claim that anymore. Other things which aren't directly income tax related, but they can have a bearing on it, are things like high income child benefit charge. So again, if you're divorcing, then if one of the spouses has been liable to pay the high income child benefit charge, that may no longer be applicable. So right, there are overlaps, but income tax is one of the ones where it's much more independent.
Okay. So the message I'm getting on both of this is it's all about talking, isn't it? And you were saying, Rebecca, that by and large, you know, it's amicable. Do you find the same cases when people come to you, or is it actually always a little bit more...
No, I
see you rolling your eyes. I can hear the answer to this one already.
I've had experience of both. I think just because of what I do, I tend to get more involved where it is contentious. So, for example, we might be asked to, if there is a financial order being put in place through the courts, be asked to calculate potential tax liabilities on assets, because that will all form part of what the equitable split is between the parties, because they also have to take into account what inherent tax liabilities there may be on an asset. So, for example, if there's lots of properties held, then we might have to calculate what the tax liabilities would be on sale to be taken into account. So we get involved from that perspective. You know, I've had a mixture, but I think I've had more contentious that I've come across than not. Yeah.
It's starting to occur to me, because they often say that the biggest time of year for divorce is just after Christmas. It's actually not, is it? It's people planning for the end of the tax year. It's just got that feel about it.
They need to wait for Easter then.
Yeah, Easter should be the worst.
Yeah.
Do you see seasonal trends like that?
I tend to think we get busier after Christmas, because I think it can be a very stressful time. You know, families all come together and it doesn't always go according to plan. So actually, it does tend to pick up in the new year for us.
And Casey?
No. Obviously, I wouldn't have as much day-to-day experience as Rebecca of sort of
sure.
that number of people going through divorces. So I tend to just get hit with them as and when they need the tax advice on things.
But we're talking here about two sets of fees. But the message that I'm getting from both of you is that actually your liabilities could be easily outweigh the cost of taking proper financial and professional advice on this. It's not, as you say, you can go on the internet and do it, but oh my goodness me, that could cost you a pretty penny if you get it wrong. In both cases, I guess.
Well, good advice isn't expensive.
Yes.
You know, good advice isn't expensive, because it will save you far more than it costs you. You know, as Rebecca said earlier, not getting this financial agreement in place could cause you so many more issues down the line. And yes, you might have saved a few thousand on the divorce process itself, but... Yeah. You've got no sort of financial clarity going forward and limitation to those claims. So actually involving the professionals can really pay dividends.
Well, especially as well, because I'm guessing, you know, it's an extraordinary emotional time. Not everybody's going to have their clear thinking head on, are they? And actually, when you're reacting and doing things like, what you really want to do is sit down with somebody who just goes, whoa, just a minute.
Yeah, that's right. And I think sometimes people will leave issues that crop up on their divorce around their finances, because it is a really difficult time, as you say, very stressful, very emotional, and they can't deal with everything all at once. Mm-hmm. And then I'll find that some people come back further down the line, perhaps when they're getting near retirement age and they're thinking about pensions that they could have been entitled to. I have actually had people come to me after years of being divorced, and they want to now sort of revisit what they could have been entitled to in respect of pensions, for example. So, yeah.
Blimey. Have you ever had anybody, this is just a daft end of the interview question, have you ever had anybody turn around and go, it's easier if we stay together?
Haven't had that, but a bit of an anecdote from a colleague is that he had people that he knew who were getting divorced, and they didn't realise that they actually needed to apply for the decree absolute. But 20 years later, they'd sort of reconciled and wanted to remarry, and then at that point, they discovered that they'd never actually got divorced. So I thought that was quite
good. Oh, in a way. Wow, that's okay, isn't it? That's
but
quite...
they were getting back together.
How lovely. Oh, that gives any eyes a message for us all there.
It's like at the end of the tunnel.
How lovely. Well, listen, it's been lovely to see you, but thank you. Difficult subject, and I can imagine your days are varied and interesting, both of you, when it comes to things like that. But for now, Rebecca Verry from Woodfine Solicitors and Katie Holmes from CKLG. Thank you very much indeed for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.